in studio with me is Diane Kane, and she's from Florida, and she suffers from MCAS, which is mast cell activation syndrome. Good morning, Diane. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for having me. I'm doing very well today, and it's interesting for me when you say that I suffer from it. The beautiful part of that is that I was diagnosed, I've been properly treated, and I am no longer suffering most days. So thank you.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of research, and I think you've hit a nail on the head there, and that's why you're over here in Ireland, is to get the message out there that there's an awful lot of people suffering with MCAS or have MCAS and don't actually know it. It's only recently, in medical terms, recently diagnosed.
Yes, it's only been diagnosed since 2009, and so it's just 10 years into, you know, science starting to understand it. So it's still in the category of emerging science, although there is a great deal that can be done for people who have this condition and who have it undiagnosed. And most people with MCAS live at a much milder, you know, with milder impacts at the milder end of the spectrum. And it's, you know, it's a relatively easy condition to get in control and to continue to manage and to have a very normal lifespan with it. And as opposed to not having it diagnosed, it can become progressive and very severe and highly debilitating. And we have a chronic illness community in the world who has been living with this condition undiagnosed. You know, many people like me for decades. You know, I was 46 years. You know, they estimate that I triggered into mast cell activation syndrome when I was 7 or 8 years of age. And so I was just diagnosed about 2.5 years ago out at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. And the diagnosis and the treatment have changed my life. And so people can live, you know, a very long, normal lifespan. The important thing is to identify it and to start to treat it.
Maybe, and I know, and I said this, Sheila, I know you're not a medical professional, but maybe you could just explain in layman's term, what is MCAS? What is a mast cell activation syndrome?
Yes, Michael, thank you. And I do want to point out that I am not a doctor. I'm here and I'm speaking as a patient on behalf of other patients and, you know, to help create advocacy and awareness for this condition. But I am here traveling in Ireland with Dr. Lawrence Afrin. And Dr. Afrin is one of the world experts on mast cell activation syndrome. And he presented a lecture on MCAS last night down in Maynooth at the university. And tomorrow evening, Dr. Afrin will be conducting a lecture on MCAS at the Black Rock Clinic at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. The focus of tomorrow evening's lecture will be for other doctors, for the medical community. However, the Black Rock Clinic is opening up the lecture for people who feel that they may be on the more advanced ends of this spectrum or have a family member. So if you are interested in attending after you hear Michael and I speak about this, please call the Black Rock Clinic and ask to be put on the guest list for tomorrow evening.
So I take it, it's MCAS is, it's triggered. You know, there's a huge amount of things can trigger it, but it's normally something in the environment. Could be a perfume, it could be some form of spray, it could be a food stuff, particularly processed foods, I take it.
Yes, and so to go back to your previous question, in terms of what actually is it, how I look at it is that it's a chronic allergic response syndrome, and it is both genetically and epigenetically driven. And what that means is we have to be born with a predisposition genetically, and then we have some kind of an epigenetic or environmental occurrence, which are, you know, a variety of environmental triggers. And a lot of this is being caused by chemical impacts. And it can be chemicals in our food. It can be chemicals in our medication. airborne chemicals. Gasoline, petroleum fumes are a major trigger for me and many, many people. In fact, most people on the MCAS spectrum. Something as simple but as toxic as perfume and colognes and, a whole variety of fragrances used in household products and chemicals in a lot of cleaning products, something as simple as Pine Sol, can really hospitalize me for a period of time. And, a fragrance exposure can trigger a migraine and can trigger a cardiac and respiratory reaction in me that can literally, it can go anywhere from a headache for a couple hours to a hospitalization. And so people, awareness is what is important at this point. Certainly, the effort that is being made by Dr. Jimmy Sheehan, one of the founders of the Black Rock Clinic and the Galway Clinic, Dr. Sheehan has taken this on here in Ireland, and he is leading the way within the medical community to bring a safe understanding and a responsible approach to dealing with MCAS, because yes, the research shows, and it's highly credentialed research, that up to 17% of the general population has mast cell activation syndrome, or the genetic propensity for it. And so that creates an overwhelming number here in Ireland of 800,000 people. And so if you can break that down and understand that the most severely impacted, which would really be the chronic illness community, people who have lived with long-term chronic fatigue syndrome and autoimmunity conditions, fibromyalgia, a variety of long-term chronic conditions, the Ehlers-Danlos syndrome community is severely impacted by mast cell activation syndrome. They're also finding that many people on the autism spectrum have mast cell activation syndrome. So there are these subset populations, specialty populations that are most severely impacted by it. And that's the first approach that needs to be made, sort of, in a communal kind of a triage approach. Let's help the people who are the worst the first, and you will get the most miraculous recoveries. I mean, 2 years ago, I couldn't get out of a wheelchair. I walked from across the street right into the studio here today, and that can still bring me to tears. It feels like a miracle for me on a daily basis. So whatever way I can help share this message to help other people, anywhere on the spectrum, to either just get into prevention so they don't have to go as far down as I went on, the elevator of this disease. And
I know before we came on air, we were just mentioning that this is it can be a progressive thing, that if you catch it early, or you recognize it early and you start to treat it earlier, a lot of the other symptoms, the other triggers, don't actually develop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, when I was a child, they estimate I triggered into mast cell activation syndrome around 7 or 8 years of age. And so, that was 40 years before they even understood that this was a condition. And so I look back, and for the purpose of how can it help other people is why I walk through that thought process to think, if we had known then what we know now, where could I have derailed some of the progression? And certainly all the way from the beginning, I am highly reactive to gluten. And the doctors and the scientists don't actually believe that it's the gluten or the wheat in the gluten. They believe that it is a chemical produced from the Roundup, from the pesticides that are used in the growing process. And so, I've been having that chemical reaction from that food that I was ingesting on a daily basis since my childhood. Had I eliminated gluten at a young age, although I test negative for celiac disease. And so that's why for decades, the doctors just overlooked that as a possibility. You know, I had been, you know, they ran celiac panels on me since my childhood. And so they would literally say, well, it's not the wheat, you know, it's not the gluten. And, it's, you know, I think it's a more common thing now. You know, I think a lot of people probably know somebody in their family or in their life who used to be able to eat, you know, various different foods, you know, and successfully, and then all of a sudden you develop this reaction and this allergy to them, and it can start slowly. It can start slowly as acid reflux and, you know, varying degrees of diarrhea or constipation, and, you know, and be episodic. And so then it there's a waxing and waning quality where it can come and go, and, you know, for long periods of time. And then it becomes progressive and persistent, and it doesn't go away. And then I started developing more and more food allergies. But the food allergies, you know, the more severe ones, you know, came later. And so...
It was a progression because the underlying thing wasn't being dealt with. It just started to grow.
It snowballs.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, we have some time here this morning. So a lot of times when I'm asked very quickly to explain what happened to me, it can be a little overwhelming to me because it was 46 years, you know. Yet I think I could condense it, you know, pretty quickly for us here right now. I seem to have relatively normal health as a young child, although I had a lot of sensitivities, both physical and emotional. But in my younger years, it was mostly emotional sensitivities. And I have also since been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which in the U.S. is considered on the autism spectrum. So I can see pretty clearly, as my parents can now, you know, back to what were just the symptoms of autism. And then, you know, when early dental interventions I had... mercury amalgams put in my mouth when I was, that started around 7 or 8 years of age. And I was also given vaccines at school at that time. And vaccines are known to have mercury. You know, they contain mercury in them, you know, lower doses, which are supposed to be safe. There are people like me who any amount of mercury, you know, put into my system is not.
And of course, that's not saying there's anything wrong with vaccination. It's just saying that for you, the mercury was a trigger.
Absolutely. And I hear so much that is being discussed about the vaccines, you know, the vaccine issue these days. And I always hear it discussed as more of a binary issue that either people have to forego the vaccines altogether, you know, or you have to have them exactly as they are. And I keep wondering, why can't we alter the vaccines and remove some of the toxic excipient ingredients, you know, and you could still have the actual vaccine. So, you know, or give the vaccines in lower doses, because sometimes MCAS can be triggered purely by a rapid onset viral or bacterial infection. And so if you're injecting higher levels of these viruses, you know, in these vaccines, if you did it in smaller amounts, you know, I would love to see that conversation expanded in light of what we're learning with mast cell activation syndrome, because I think vaccines are important. And again, I'm a patient. I'm not a doctor. And so that's just, you know, something I'm paying attention to, and I do find interesting.
Yeah, no, and I have to say that I totally agree with you there. And I know you have a video that's out there, and it's about 30 minutes long, and you go through what you went through. Now, we don't have that length of time left at the moment, but maybe you can just condense and give people an idea of what you actually went through with before you knew it was MCAS.
Great.
And then maybe tell us what has happened since you got diagnosed.
Great. So I look back, and around that time when I was 7 or 8 years of age, what had previously been sort of a level of emotional anxiety, it became physical. And any kind of an emotional stressor or any kind of an allergic exposure, allergen exposure, would then it started triggering a cardiac reaction in me, and my face would flush severely, and so I would go bright red, like fire engine red, and I would my heart rate would speed up and dysregulate, and I would develop respiratory distress at a lower level on smaller reactions, but you know at a hospitalizing level, you know, at more severe reactions. And so that went on episodically. You know, I would have long periods of relative stability throughout my, all the way throughout my early years and throughout my teenage years. And then by my early 20s, as a lot of people in our world do, I would drink socially. And I would always get sick from it, though. I would get this tremendous relief when I would have my first or second drink, and it would calm something down in my body. And that sensation kept me going back for more and more. Yet the next day, it was always regrettable. It was always, you know, a disaster afterwards for me. And yet I kept doing it again and again. And so eventually, you know, I ended up quitting drinking, and I had developed so many GI issues, acid reflux issues, and like I said, you know, the alternating, you know, bowel problems with diarrhea and constipation, and, and so life kept going on, and I kept trying to be well, and I kept seeking help from more doctors, and I would say to my mom and my sisters that I felt like I was a little dinghy in the ocean that kept springing leaks. And as soon as we'd plug up one of the holes, another leak would spring. And, you know, it became an endurance contest at times. And I look back, though, 20 years ago, and what I thought was so complex was such a milder aspect of this. And so I don't minimize it at any level for anybody, you know. And so often we do, you know, we take for granted. You know, we there are so many products out there to handle acid reflux and, you know, the bowel problems that we can have, and, you know, and skin rashes, and, you know, all of these variety of different allergic responses that we have somehow normalized this, that we just assume, oh, well, that acid reflux is just a part of life. But if we can stop and pay attention to these signs at an earlier stage, then we can avert, you know, the more advanced levels of this, you know, very easily, actually, quite simply, you know, by doing that. But we didn't have that information then, and I kept doing the best that I could, and yet I was continuing to rack up autoimmune condition after autoimmune condition, and the doctors were becoming more and more stumped. You know, they couldn't find a way to relate all the various conditions in my different organs and systems. You know, you kind of wonder, you know, how can acid reflux, you know, be related to a skin condition and a skin rash, or a severe respiratory condition, or a low-lying heart problem. And so I kept going, and I kept seeking help. And it was sometime around the late 1990s that that I started seeking medical care beyond my local healthcare providers. And throughout the course of my life, I lived back and forth between the States and Ireland, and I spent time studying in the UK as well. And so I had access to doctors on both sides of the ocean. I sought help in Europe and in the States, and everybody was stumped. They could not figure it out. It was a mystery. And so, I kept going, and until I couldn't, you know. Eventually, the food allergies is what, you know, that is what really, really became progressive, highly progressive and debilitating in me. I had lived with arthritic pain cycles and fibromyalgia for about 15 years at that point, and that was very debilitating, but it is a different category altogether when you can't eat. So I, you know, when I gave up gluten, then, because eventually one of my sisters was diagnosed with celiac, so she figured it out for me with the gluten. And so you know, I gave up gluten, but unfortunately, then I started becoming reactive to all the other foods that I was eating. So one by one, over a period of 2 years, I lost the ability to eat anything without having a significant seizure. Once I was diagnosed, the doctors at Cedars-Sinai told me that I had been, from my medical history, I had been in a state of chronic anaphylaxis for over 20 years. And I cried when he said that to me. And my sister Linda was with me, and she looked right at the doctor, and she said, that's what she's been trying to explain, you know? And so we were with, you know, the first time I was with a doctor who understood what was wrong, my entire life changed. You know, when the doctor who finally diagnosed me with mast cell activation syndrome figured out what I had and started treating me, I have never spent a night in his hospital. And that is miraculous. After, I mean, I've spent a lot of nights in a lot of hospitals around the world. And so I have a freedom from this now. It's a daily management situation. But as it progressed, and then I started losing my ability to eat foods, you know, I literally, you know, it impacted my heart rate to a place where I had to be rendered onto intravenous nutrition. And I lived on IV nutrition for 1 year and 8 months as we sought medical help. And we found it out at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. And I was transferred out there after, you know, a pretty harrowing experience when my heart rate dropped to the point where I had to be hospitalized and then transferred up to NYU in New York. And so it was quite a journey, but I still feel like one of the lucky ones. You know, I have been, I don't think, why me? Why do I have MCAS? If anything, there are times when I think, why me? Why am I one of the ones that is in recovery, that got to get all the help, you know?
Well, I have to say, and I said this to you before we came on air, you're an amazing person to have gone through this and are coming out the other end. I think a lot of people who've gone through what you have would have given up.
Right. Yeah.
They would have given up because you went through an awful lot. You know, right from, you know, you spent nearly 50 years undiagnosed. You know, people, they were seeing one part of it, and as soon as they tried to fix that, it hopped on, it came up on something else and something else. And then I liked your analogy of the person trying to put their finger in to stop the leak, and there's only so many fingers you have. I think of pressure in a balloon, that every time you push down the pressure bubble, it just pushes out somewhere else.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was an endurance contest. Absolutely, yeah. You know, I look back on that and I do have that feeling. And but the overwhelming feeling I have is gratitude, you know, that I did endure it and I did get to the other side. And yeah, the analogy you're talking about is the little dinghy analogy that I make. I would say to my mom and my sisters, who are always very supportive with me, I would say to them for years that I felt like a little dinghy that would spring a leak, and as soon as I plugged one leak, another one would spring open and then, you know, start taking on water from another direction. So with MCAS, it is important to know that there is a waxing and waning quality to it. It comes and goes in episodes and in severity. And there's also a morphology to it. You know, it can impact one organ and system for a period of time, and then, you know, medically we can treat that organ and system, and then it can, you know, morph into another organ and system. So it can be complex, and, you know, you can have doctors who really try, you know, for decades they were trying to relate the various conditions in me. And so eventually we got there, you know, and there's a lot of information in it. And, you know, what I credit with being able to get through what I got through isn't anything of my own. My parents both gave me an enormous sense of perseverance, you know, that you keep going in life. And and so I always had that, not keeping going. It didn't, you know, that it wasn't in my thought process, and I'm really grateful for that. You know, but most of all, I feel like God gave me a hopeful heart. You know,
and now we're very quickly, believe it or not, running out of time. Maybe you could let the listeners know, if they want to know a little bit more about MCAS, where can they get that sort of information? And maybe tell them a little bit more or about tonight or tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night at the Black Rock Clinic at 7 p.m. And if you want to get on the guest list, call the Black Rock Clinic and explain to them your situation and that you'd like to come and learn. If not, I know last night's lecture at Maynooth was videotaped, and we will make that available on various websites and on some of the online support groups. And I think the best place to direct people for information on MCAS at this point would be the Mastocytosis Society, tmsforacure.com. And other than that, you know, you can Google MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome, and you can come up with a tremendous amount of resources online that are there. And so, but locally, it is going to be the Black Rock Clinic who are going to step forward within Ireland on this issue. And it's a wonderful, wonderful blessing that they are doing so. Yes. And so what was the other question that you were asking?
No, you've got the both of them there.
Okay, yeah. Great.
It was about the Black Rock Clinic and where...
And if I could speak to one more thing before we run out of time. You know, I do think of myself as a member of the chronic illness community, having gone through so many decades of being sick without the doctors having the answers. And I just wanted to let people know, you know, first of all, if you're out there and if you've been sick for a long time and if any of this is striking a chord with you or ringing a bell for you, you know, have hope. Hang in there. Seek the help. Come back to the medical community. They have the answers now. A lot of people in the chronic illness community are living out there in isolation who have been, you know, largely unsupported medically for years. And, you know, a lot of people end up alone, and family members and friends can fall away because of the years of frustration. And if the doctors are saying that there isn't anything wrong, then, you know, people were accused of all kinds of, you know, of it being psychosomatic and, you know, kind of psychiatric accusations with this and everything. It's not the case. You know, this is a real valid illness. There is treatment for it. There is hope. And if you know somebody who has been sick with these issues for a long time, reach out to them. Let them know about this information. And most of all, if you can be kind, just be kind. You know, kindness matters. And you know, it helps for us to feel like we're not alone. Thank you.
Diane, many thanks for coming in today.